This is Night Call, nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight, the homosexual problem, with guest Albert Einstein College of Medicine psychiatrist, Dr. Charles W. Socarides. Night Call is an open forum. Speak for yourself. Ask your own questions. Call Night Call Collect from anywhere in North America. From the East and Midwest, call 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host, Del Shields. And from New York, this is Bill Richards sitting in once again for Del Shields, who is absent this evening. All over America, there exists those people we call homosexuals. Perhaps as many as 4 million of them. Some living openly, some hiding their way of life from a condemning public. Are they criminals? Dangerous? Perverted? Mentally ill? According to homosexual organizations, they are none of these. The organizations declare that a homosexual is a normal person who has different sexual preferences. Dr. Charles Socarides has treated hundreds of homosexuals and observing thousands more. A psychiatrist at Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York and author of The Overt Homosexual, he says that such acceptance of homosexuality as being a simple variation of normality would be naive, not to say grounded in ignorance. Equally misleading is the idea that it is merely an aspect of normal development. He considers homosexuality an illness, and he is critical that no medical facility exists that is specifically designed for the treatment of the sexual deviant. Nowhere can he walk in and say, "I am a homosexual, and I need help." My guest tonight is Dr. Charles W. Socarides, calling in from New York City, to explore with us the problems of homosexuality. We invite you, our Night Call listeners, to call and discuss your reactions to homosexuals. Do you think they are normal people? What would you do with one in your own family? Do you believe homosexuals can be treated? Or do you feel they should be isolated from the rest of society? Dr. Socarides, good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Richards.
Well, please call me Bill. We will try to be relatively informal this evening as we converse between ourselves as well as with our callers this evening. First on my list of questions, why do you say that a homosexual needs help?
Well, in the first place, Mr. Richards, the homosexual has really, and that is the overt obligatory homosexual, that is one who must have sexual contact with people of the same sex, has forfeited a major part of his life. He is unable to have any meaningful relationships with a person of the opposite sex, perhaps the most meaningful relationship in all of life. And he's unable to function with women, and he also has very difficult relationships with men. He has, in my opinion, a very serious condition that he has to deal with, one perhaps nearly malignant in character, because if the homosexual condition is not changed, it certainly will go on for life.
Well, is this problem expressed only in the male-female relationship or a non-relationship, or are there other psychiatric problems that exist?
Well, yes, there are. As a matter of fact, in the overt obligatory homosexual, the homosexual acts are always preceded by the presence of intense anxiety and or depression on the part of the homosexual. And having the homosexual performing the sexual act is an alleviation of his deepest anxieties. Homosexuality has to do with what we term in psychiatry ego survival. It has to do with his pulling himself together, with his reconstituting himself through a sexual performance. It is a very necessary thing that he has to do with which he cannot control and over which he has no choice.
Well, you use the phrase obligatory. I think we may need some definitions here.
Someone must carry out the sexual act with a person of the same sex, or else he will experience intolerable anxiety and or depression.
Well, are there other categories of homosexuality?
Yes, I think it's become clear now that there are various forms of homosexuality. The one that the medicine is particularly concerned with, psychiatry is particularly concerned with, is the condition of true homosexuality, which I just described a minute ago. But certainly individuals can carry out sexual acts with a variety of objects or persons and under all kinds of circumstances. And under certain situations, for example, a person may have a homosexual experience, such as in a prison, or such as in places where there is unavailability of women for a long period of time. Homosexuality and homosexual acts can be carried out for all the motivations that lead men to do all kinds of things, such as desires for prestige, special privilege, an extra thrill. All these particular things can occur, and a homosexual can, or rather, an individual may practice may engage in a homosexual act for all these different motivations. However, we see that these people can also carry out heterosexual performance, and they prefer heterosexual acts. In the latter instance, the reason for the homosexual act is not based on unconscious fact, is not based on fear, is not stereotype, but has a high degree of variability. Now, of course, one must be very careful, and this can only be told by a clinical examination, that whether a homosexual act is a part and parcel of a true homosexuality, or whether it is a variational or extra thrill experience, or done for some kind of gain. And the latter person is not necessarily true homosexual.
Well, statistically, we're talking in, I guess, some guesswork terms of 4 million homosexuals. Are we saying a greater number of these are obligatory or fall in these other categories?
Well, the figure of perhaps conservatively estimated is between about 2.5 to 4 million males, adult males, or overt obligatory homosexuals, and when one might guess that approximately the same number of women. Now, the figure would be grossly enlarged, I think, if you included those individuals who have engaged in one or more homosexual experiences during their lifetime, but are not truly homosexual. And this explains some of the great confusion that has confounded the public when figures of something like 20 million homosexuals are announced in various articles by certain groups. I feel that this large figure is announced precisely because there's been an attempt to make homosexuality a normal form of sexuality existing alongside that of heterosexuality, but just simply being a normal variation. You see, unfortunately happened with the Kinsey report was, Kinsey reported something like 30 to 35% of individuals have had one or more homosexual contacts in their life. These are not all true homosexuals. These are just simply people, for the most part, who have had, through various reasons, perhaps experimentation, perhaps many other motivations, a homosexual experience. They're not true homosexuals, per se. That can only be told by a clinical examination and a life history.
Doctor, is there a difference between female and male homosexuals?
In what sense, Bill?
Well, in perhaps the origins of the homosexual development.
No, I think that the origin of homosexuality, of obligatory homosexuality, is the same both male and female, and our recent psychoanalytic findings seem to place the origin of homosexuality somewhat earlier than we originally thought, and that is that the nuclear conflict of the homosexual probably begins before the age of 3. And that it arises from a faulty gender identity, and the causation is the same. It has to do with certain feelings towards the mother, certain fears of engulfment, certain terrifying anxieties that exist.
Well, how are these expressed? You say fears of engulfment and terrifying anxieties. Just how are they manifested?
Well, these are manifested in a number of ways. We find that in the analysis of a homosexual, that he will recreate those actual anxieties as he attempts to make a separation from his mother. Because we know the homosexual, clinically, tries to keep an optimal distance and a closeness to his mother in various ways. That's why he can't get, and I say optimal, because that's why he cannot get too close to women, because all women represent the mother, and he will experience a tremendous anxiety. And as we try in treatment to promote his independence, promote his accepting his masculine identity and breaking away from his identification with his mother, we also see tremendous anxiety. And furthermore, we find that, for example, in male homosexuality, that there are tremendous problems as regards body-ego boundaries. Very often a homosexual will feel that he cannot feel the boundaries of his body. He doesn't quite know where his body is. For example, in dreams, he might dream of himself having a bandaged arm, but when the bandage is removed, there is no arm there. In other words, there is a defective body ego, as we would say in a technical sense.
I think I have to ask another specific here. What actually was Mama doing, you know, in the pre-3-year period to initiate this sort of anxiety?
That's a very pertinent question. The mother, as far as we can determine, in those individuals who develop the nuclear conflict, which results ultimately in homosexual behavior, homosexuality, is a particular kind. I suppose you might call her, in a sense, a psychologically crushing mother who does not allow the child a certain autonomy. You know, in the first 3 years of life, especially between the ages of 1.5 to 3, a child undergoes a certain maturational phase, which he must undergo successfully. This is called the separation individuation phase of human development. And it's exactly what those words say. For example, he must separate from his mother and become an individual. If the mother is in any way fearful to the little boy, if she does not allow him to become an autonomous individual, if for certain reasons of her own she must keep him close to her, if she cannot tolerate his no, if she cannot tolerate his motoric development in which he becomes independent and fights against his mother, if she will not tolerate, for example, his touching his genitals and discovering himself, but threatens him in various ways, this boy will remain fixed to the mother, because it takes a lot of courage for a boy to begin the separation process.
Will this fixing take place in all such cases, or what are statistics
let me put it this way. I've never seen an obligatory homosexual who did not have this basic problem of being unable to separate from his mother and form his own identity. There is another factor which plays a very important part in the family constellation of homosexuals, or those who are going to be homosexuals. Not only is there the cold, crushing, overwhelming, engulfing mother, who for reasons of her own feels that the boy should not be given his autonomy, but there is an absent father, or a rejecting father, or a cold father, and the child cannot go to him in the formation of his own identity, and in using him as a buffer against the fears that he has about his mother. So that is another factor. If there's a strong father, if there's a father who possibly intervenes for the child and allows a little boy to identify with him, he might make it through this difficult phase, even though there is this problem with the mother. But initially, the problem begins in this separation and individuation. You know, you might compare it if you make an analogy to a mercury globule, that's and you've seen them as one is trying to separate into another globule. For a moment, they are trying to separate, and finally, one splits off from the other and becomes a separate small little entity. And it's something like that. There's continually in the first years of life a fusion with the mother and an inability to separate oneself from mother. But it does happen. It would happen normally under proper circumstances. It is only under pathological circumstances that this event does not take place. And we know that if it doesn't take place by a certain age, that the boy has tremendous difficulty in realizing himself as his own entity, his own individual, and appreciating himself as an individual separate from the mother. Because we know that when this does not occur, the homosexual feels tied to his mother and feels identified with his mother, feels as if he is the mother, and as a result feels a great inadequacy as regards his own strength, a great weakness. And we know that later on in homosexuality, what the homosexual is doing is striving to find his masculinity in the partner, in the male partner, in the male, in the genitals, in the penis of the male partner, through identification.
All right, Doctor. I think at this point we're going to stop for just a moment. After we take a brief break, we will be talking with some listeners. Right now, this is the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Charles Socarides after station identification.
If you left school and you're between 16 and 22, Job Corps wants to give you a chance to start again. A chance to learn the skills that can help you get a good job. Maybe as an auto mechanic, an office worker, a welder, just about anything. And while you're learning, you'll be living at a Job Corps center. You'll get free medical and dental care, clean clothes, your own bed to sleep in, and three square meals a day. Job Corps will even pay you while you're learning. See your state employment office or write Job Corps, Washington, D.C. Job Corps will give you a chance, just for once. Give yourself a chance.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to guest psychiatrist Dr. Charles Socarides about homosexuality. Call Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this is Bill Richards sitting in for Del Shields. We will take our first phone call on tonight's program from New Concord, Ohio. Mr. Clark listening on WMCO. Mr. Clark?
Yes.
Good evening. Dr. Socarides is on the line, ready to talk with you.
Okay, Dr. Socarides.
Yes, Mr. Clark.
I was wondering, do you have any information on the, population of the homosexuality rate or the homosexuality rate in New York City itself?
Well, as you know, and as you can imagine, the figures as regards incidents of homosexuality are very difficult to get, and I would imagine that they certainly probably run higher than what we have ascertained is the national incidence. The national incidence being about 2.5 to 4 percent.
Yeah.
So that let's see, I believe New York has about 3 million people. So I guess it would be about maybe perhaps 3% of that, which would make it about 30,000, I believe, if my mathematics is correct, of obligatory homosexuals. However, New York City, and as you know, other urban cities to which the homosexual comes, searching for anonymity too, and because of the social, the unfortunate social strictures against the homosexual, and I believe the some of the unfair laws about the homosexual, comes to large urban areas, and so this figure can vary and swell and at various times.
Yes, in relationship to Washington, D.C., is there a higher population of the homosexual in New York in relation to Washington?
I should imagine it would be higher in New York because of the great anonymity in New York.
Could you, say something about the colonies in Manhattan? I've heard of, or Long Island, I mean.
In Long Island?
Yes.
Well, I have no personal knowledge of the Long Island colonies. You mean on our so-called Fire Island?
Yes,
and
I
so
do.
Forth?
Yes.
Well, there are certainly individuals, I think, and this is terribly unfortunate, mm-hmm. who have been discriminated against, and I think the homosexual has been discriminated against unfairly because, in my mind, overt homosexuality is a form of illness, and certainly these people should not be penalized the way anyone suffering from any other condition should not be penalized. Flock together.
Yes.
And anytime you persecute a minority, you're going to get them getting together to protect themselves. And so these colonies are certainly present in on Fire Island, and it's a well-known fact.
Mr. Clark?
I think it's unfortunate in a way.
We must now move on to another call. Thank you very much for taking the time to call Night Call this evening.
Okay.
Right.
Thank
Good
you
night.
Very much.
This time from New York, Miss Francis, listening to Night Call on WLIB. Good evening, Miss Francis.
Hello, Doctor.
Hello, Miss Francis.
I'd like to ask you a question. I'm curious, have you ever had a sexual intercourse with a homosexual?
No, I have not, Miss Francis.
Then, in other words, what you base your whole thing on is from studies you've made.
Well, you know, I don't have to have a schizophrenia to know something about the symptoms of schizophrenia, nor do I have to have diabetes to know some of the symptoms or understand the condition of diabetes. I don't quite get your point.
Well, I was just curious if it was
I'm not commenting upon the sexual experience of homosexuality. Certainly, if you want me to, I will. Certainly, the orgastic experience of the homosexual is a very profound experience to him.
Well,
is that what you mean?
You know, you're not saying that they're just doing this for a mental thing. I mean, some of them.
No. There is a mental problem behind it all, but certainly the sexual experience is a real one.
All right then. If a man and a woman has a relation and they do something with each other, abnormal, is that a mental thing also?
You mean the sexual act between heterosexuals?
No. I'm asking you about a man and a woman.
Yo, that's heterosexuals.
Excuse me.
You mean do I think that heterosexual intercourse is abnormal?
No, I believe what she is asking is anything other than what is considered the normal sexual act between a man and a woman. Does it have a mental problem behind it?
Right. That's what I'm asking.
Would you state that question again, Mr. Bill?
All right.
I don't quite follow it.
All right. Does anything beyond or anything other than a sexual act as commonly considered,
perversion or deviation?
Right. Is
no,
it
absolutely not.
Okay.
The perversions or deviations are those conditions in which there is no choice of action, that it is not preliminary to a sexual intercourse, and as a matter of fact, the actual sexual intercourse between the male and the female is precluded in these conditions which we have thought of, which we think of as pathological. Normal sexual intercourse, in my opinion, can be preceded by any form of genital or extragenital stimulation.
Well, are any of the homosexuals that you've treated ever been cured?
Yes, and not only my own results, but there have been results now from the Portman Clinic in London, reported in 1960. There have been results that have been reported by Irving Bieber's study of the Society of Medical Psychoanalysts in it in my own cases seem to indicate that there's much more hope for changing the condition of homosexuality than we have hitherto suspected.
Miss Francis, thank you very much for calling Night Call tonight. Good night. Doctor, do the non-obligatory homosexuals need treatment, and if so, what sort?
Well, of course, you know, Bill, nobody needs treatment unless they themselves suffer and wish treatment. This is something between the individual and his doctor. And I'm not espousing here that all homosexuals should be treated. There may be some homosexuals shouldn't be treated at all.
In other words, if they are happy with themselves, they shouldn't be?
If they're happy with themselves, or if they feel that, for example, if you take a man of 50 who's made despite many of the problems which are attended upon his homosexuality, if he doesn't want treatment and he feels that this is the way he wants to continue his life, there's no reason why this man should go for help. As a matter of fact, help the need for help is implicit upon his desire for help, his motivation for help and to wish to change.
Well, you apparently feel that there are many, many homosexuals then that do voluntarily want help.
I think there is probably a tremendous number of homosexuals, Bill, who want help. But up till now, medical science has offered very little to them, and as a result, they've given up. And I think work like mine and work like Dr. Bieber's and some of the other work that's now coming out tends to support that we can offer a lot of help and a lot of hope to homosexuals. I think it's very interesting that the people who keep saying that homosexuals don't want help are a kind of vocal minority. We don't know the vast tragedies that are occurring all the time of individuals who don't simply know what to do when they suddenly have sexual experiences with people of the same sex. They're frightened, they're confused, they don't know where to turn, and they don't know what to do, and they're terribly confused about this whole thing, and that's why I've suggested in addresses before the AMA and addresses before the National Institute of Mental Health that a facility should be provided, a voluntary facility, absolutely voluntary, where individuals who can come for guidance, an institute perhaps of sexual rehabilitation, where there would be hardly any fee in which people could come for guidance in these problems. I think the tragedies of homosexuality or homosexual feelings and overwhelming dreads is probably unknown because nobody talks about it. And
doctor,
nobody
I think
do anything about it.
Fine. I think we need to move to another caller now. We have a listener in St. Paul, Minnesota, Mr. Loy, listening on KTWN. Mr. Loy?
Yes.
Dr. Socarides is on the line.
Good evening, Dr.
Yes, Mr. Loy.
I have a question, several quick ones here. First of all, I wonder if you could define the term overt obligatory homosexual.
Yes, yes, by overt obligatory homosexual, I mean, first, let's say a homosexual is one who practices homosexual acts, that is, sexual acts with a person of the same sex. Overt means openly, that he is not, that this condition is not latent, that he is actively engaged, whether part-time or much of the time, but he actively engages in homosexual relations. And when I say obligatory, I say this is a descriptive term which means that all overt homosexual acts of this type, which are of the type that we say are based on unconscious fear, a person must carry out. He has no choice in the matter whatsoever. And this is one of the major points I try to make. That is, I think that since the homosexual has no choice, that he is being unjustly penalized because he's suffering from a particular form of illness over which he has no control. He absolutely has to do these things, and yet he is terribly penalized.
All right. Now, you established that overt, obligatory homosexual preference, attitude, etc., is established by age 3.
No, I say that, you see, when I talk about age 3, I don't mean that a boy is practicing homosexuality by the age of 3.
No,
I'm saying that the nuclear conflict is set up, which later on will result in his seeking out men in order to ensure his own himself against deep anxiety.
But you have likened that to a mother situation, a mother relationship.
I say that the initial problem comes in that he's unable to traverse this phase of development, that is the separation individuation phase, and it's all up to the mother to help him do this. If the mother's attitudes are wrong, then he will not make it through this phase. And that's why homosexuality has been with us through the ages. This is perhaps an explanation why it is ubiquitous and it existed in all mankind, because we all are children once, and we all have to go through this phase, and some make it and some don't.
All right, one last question, Doctor. Is the overt obligatory homosexual a compulsive or a willing partner, participant?
Is that an either-or, you mean?
Well, it has
a degree of compulsivity to it in that he has no choice and he
doctor,
must carry out his act.
Doctor, excuse me. I think what we're going to have to do, we're going to have to take a break here for a moment. Mr. Loy, I'm going to go ahead and disconnect you and ask the doctor to respond to this last part of your question after the break.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Loy.
This is the Night Call Network. More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Charles Socarides after station identification. Next week on Night Call, Del Shields with his guests, president for the National Organization for Women and author Mrs. Betty Friedan, former crusading journalist with the Atlanta Constitution, Dick Hebert, Columbia student and author of The Strawberry Statement, Notes of a College Revolutionary, James Cunin, Ugandan editor of the controversial African periodical Transition, Rayat Niyogi, and screenwriter and author of the best-selling novel $100 Misunderstanding, Bob Gover and Friend. Monday, The Feminine Mystique with National Organization for Women President Betty Friedan. Tuesday, Whatever Happened to the Crusading Journalist with reporter Dick Hebert. Wednesday, A Student Voice on Campus Revolt with Columbia student and author James Cunin. Thursday, a black African looks at black power with Ugandan editor Rayat Niyogi. And Friday, prostitution with author Bob Gover and friend. All this next week on Night Call. Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to guest psychiatrist Dr. Charles Socarides about homosexuality. Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And this is Bill Richards sitting in for Del Shields. Doctor, do we remember the question we had, and will you respond?
Well, Bill, I think I've pretty much answered it, except to say that the activities of the obligatory homosexual are determined by unconscious forces of which the individual has no control whatsoever. And in that case, they are stereotyped and they're compulsive, and they arise from deep innermost fears, and the person has no choice over what he does.
All right. We have a caller now from Indianapolis, Indiana. Miss Sanders, listening to Night Call on WTLC. Miss Sanders?
Hello.
Yes.
This thing about homosexual, well, I don't understand what you're talking about, really. But I feel like this. In the beginning, there was man and woman, and they were created for each other. So how is it that the people feel as though they have to go to one particular sex as, you know, going to their own sex? This is stupid. Now, if this is the way that it had been planned, there would have been no man and woman.
Well, Miss Sanders, I think you bring up a very important point. You know, first let me make it clear that there is no innate desire. One is not born with a desire for the same sex or the opposite sex. We are finally facing that fact. I think the problem has been with science that we haven't liked to face the fact that one is not born with a chromosomal tagging, so to speak, which says when one grows up, one will choose a person of the same sex or the opposite sex. What we do know, however, is that the standard male-female design of pattern is culturally ingrained from birth and is anatomically outlined through about a half a billion years of evolution, so that cells that reciprocally were adapted to each other for procreation and for the survival of the species, it came about through all these years of evolution that organ systems became reciprocally adapted, and finally individuals. And this has been the standard male-female pattern, which is perpetually maintained, and only fear could disrupt this pattern. Only massive fear, and the individual tries to make the best of things. He cannot have intercourse with a person of the opposite sex, for which he is programmed for after he is born. After he is born, I would repeat, and fear dislodges this male-female design.
Okay, then, if this is from fear, wouldn't you say that this fear has been adapted through the child's bringing up?
That's right.
Okay,
that's right. This fear comes from early environmental conditions, which are not favorable for the child to separate and become an individual and feel strong and accept his own gender identity, that he's a boy or that
okay.
he's a girl.
But the thing of it is, it is something wrong in the world, because a child that is brought up in fear and goes to the same sex, then this means that he has lived with this fear.
That's right.
And this is the way that he has to adjust. You know, he can't.
That's right. But our aim is to, and our thoughts are that perhaps we can get rid of this fear and allow a man to accept himself for what he is. That is a man, and follow what he would ordinarily follow. And that is the standard male-female design, which is set up.
Miss Sanders. Ms. Sanders, we have other callers waiting to talk with Dr. Socarides. We thank you very much for calling Night Call tonight, and we hope that we'll be hearing from you again sometime.
All right.
Thank you. Calling in now, Doctor, from Denver, Colorado, listening on KOA, is Mr. Killalay. Mr. Killalay? Hello?
Yes.
Mr. Killalay?
Yes.
Dr. Socarides is on the line.
Oh. Hello, Mr. Killalay.
I'd like to know... You spoke earlier of the homosexual desiring to have the sex find their masculinity through the genitals.
Well, he wants to find his masculinity, yes, through the sexual relations with a man.
Sexual relations with another man.
That's right.
Through rectal intercourse.
Well, through whatever contact it is the contact with the man. The relationship with the man, and especially the sexual relationship. Was there a question about that, or did you just want me to emphasize that?
I was just wondering if there was a difference, because this appeared to me that this man still, that being in prison, he might still be normal, but his sex pressures forced him on to...
That was the point I was making, that that kind of homosexual behavior may not necessarily be true homosexuality.
Okay.
That kind of person, once out of prison, will in all probability go back to his ordinary heterosexual life.
Mr. Killalay, thank you very much for calling Night Call.
Okay.
Good night. A call now, Doctor, from Boston, Massachusetts. Mr. Pede, listening on WBUR. Mr. Pede, good evening.
Yes, Dr. Socarides.
Yes, Mr. Pede.
Yes, I'd like to direct a question to you concerning a situation in a college rooming situation where one of the roommates is known to be a homosexual and the others are heterosexual. Do the heterosexual members of the apartment complex have anything to fear, say, from the homosexual that he, say, will infringe on their right to choose whom they associate with, have relations with, etc.?
Well, first I want to say that a homosexual, a true homosexual is not made, in my opinion, after the age of 3, unless you have the basic nuclear fears which have to do with one's own gender identity. I don't believe you can make a homosexual out of a heterosexual man, even if he has been subjected or has undergone a homosexual of the avariciousness of a homosexual, and this is not necessarily so at all. Homosexuals, for the major part, I don't feel are going to intrude themselves upon heterosexuals. Matter of fact, many homosexuals have a great deal of shame and guilt about their homosexuality, and they certainly are not going to try to, in my opinion, some may, of course, it all depends on what type of conscience formation they have. You see, it doesn't just necessarily follow that a homosexual will impose himself upon a heterosexual.
Is this the normal state of affairs, or
I believe, in my findings over the years, I believe this is so.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pede, for calling Night Call.
All right, thank you.
Good night. Another call now, Doctor, from Keene, New Hampshire. Mr. Ames, listening on WFCR. Good evening, Mr. Ames.
Good evening. How are you?
Fine. How are you, sir?
Not too bad. Would you explain to me what the difference between homosexuality and transsexuality?
Well, that's an interesting question because with all the interest now in the so-called transsexual surgery that has been apparent in the press and in some of our medical centers. Personally, I believe that there's no true condition such as transsexualism. I think those individuals and the transsexual is defined as someone who has an importunate or overwhelming desire to change to change his own sex because he feels he is a person of the opposite sex.
Right.
And decides to make an adjustment to life by altering his body to conform with his abnormal psychological situation. And I think that these people are either severely ill, homosexuals, perhaps the most severe, or that they are transvestites. And in either case, they have given up the desire to achieve their masculinity and have really defaulted, have given up. And say, well, perhaps I will change the whole thing by changing and altering my genitals. And I feel that these operations are probably doomed to failure. But they're now in a investigative period, and I'm sure the medical center doing them will have adequate follow-up. And I think that my views will ultimately be justified in this matter.
Are you aware of the fact that out in the West Coast with are you familiar with Dr. Harry Benjamin?
Yes, I'm familiar with Dr. Benjamin's work and with the work.
Clinic.
Although his work is here in New York City,
right,
but I know of the work at UCLA too.
Right, out at UCLA.
Yes.
They have recently discovered that in regards to the cells in the body that are both male and female.
Well, you see, that work was not, of course, discovered at UCLA. We have known that the primordial cells begin with a female cell, and then, but finally, in the earliest days of embryonic growth, that a decision is made by the body whether these are going to develop into testicular cells or ovarian cells, so that a person is either male or female, or in certain cases, he will become an intersex, an embryonic defect. But what we're talking about in transsexualism is not those people who have embryological defects. That is, for example, a woman might not have a vagina completely developed, or a man may not have a penis completely developed. That these are defects due to certain factors which have caused embryological failures. But we are not discussing those individuals when we talk about transsexuals. We're talking about individuals who have normal genital apparatus and however, feel that they are persons of the opposite sex.
Right.
Mr. Ames, thank you very much for calling Night Call.
Okay.
Good night. Doctor, is it possible to briefly tell us at this point how one identifies a homosexual in the family?
Well, I think now we're beginning to come up with some findings. For example, I think that time will come when early homosexuality might be, or a tendency to it might be picked up at a very early age, perhaps around the age of 3. We would customarily find that a child would have a great deal of difficulty in being separate from his mother. For example, in my book, The Overt Homosexual, I talk about a certain phenomenon which was discovered by me in my own researches, which was called a screaming phenomenon. And very typically, because the child has difficulty in forming his own ego and his own identity, he screams mightily whenever separated from his mother. Now, this is not to say that anybody who screams when separated from his mother is going to be homosexual, but we might strongly suspect that if the child cannot bear to be out of the sight of the mother, or he cannot remove himself from the mother without a great deal of anxiety, that there is some difficulty in conceiving of himself as a separate individual entity. We also see certain other things around 4, 5, and 6. Because of the intense identification with mother, we see that the child begins to feel that he cannot do the things that other little boys can do. He feels differently. We see at around 6, 7, or 8, tremendous inhibitions as regards engagement in certain types of sports and athletic activities, which would require a knowledge of one's own body, where it is, what it's doing. We see then also that at around the age of puberty, with the tremendous changes due to the puberty and the increased hormones that occur at that time, the child goes into a rather terrific conflict and finds that he will, out of a sense of weakness, begin to search out boys to play with and to love and to feel close to rather than girls.
Doctor, we have other listeners standing by to call, but before we talk with another listener, this is the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dr. Charles Socarides after station identification. Monday night on Night Call, the feminine mystique with Del Shields and his guest, National Organization for Women president and author of a bestseller, Mrs. Betty Friedan. The suffragettes have risen again. Feminists are on the march once more. There is a new feminism abroad, asserts a leader of National Organization for Women, known as NOW. It comes from the fact that 9 out of 10 girls will work for money at some time in their lives, and when they do, they will suddenly find themselves treated as second-class citizens. NOW's Bill of Rights includes the right of every woman to control her own reproductive life. And these new feminists have staunch support from old-timers in the Lucy Stone League, founded in 1921. We're not men's property, says the League's current president. American women seeking a new role, looking for new freedoms. The Feminine Mystique with author Betty Friedan, Monday night on Night Call. Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to guest psychiatrist Dr. Charles Socarides about homosexuality. Night Call Collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Again, Del Shields.
And again, Bill Richards sitting in for Del Shields. Doctor, we have a call now from Hartford, Connecticut. Miss Lucas listening on WFCR. Miss Lucas, good evening.
Good evening.
Hello, Miss Lucas.
Hello. I wanted to ask Dr. Socarides if is the reason why male homosexuality is much more prevalent than female homosexuality, is the reason because the boy has to overcome, the caretaker is a woman, and so the boy has to overcome the fact that he doesn't have an image to follow in the woman, whereas the girl is raised by a woman and so has that image to follow. And so I was wondering if that was one reason why male homosexuality is more prevalent than female homosexuality, because the boy does have to overcome that before he can become a man, identifying with his mother, I mean.
Well, I think that we don't really know whether male homosexuality is more prevalent than female. Female homosexuals do not tend to identify themselves as female homosexuals. It's much easier for women to live together and this be passed off as simply two girls roaming together, but men are highly suspect. And however, things are changing with this sweeping sexual revolution. We note now that in New York City, for example, the numbers of so-called lesbian bars are increasing, and it's much easier for a female homosexual to make a homosexual contact than previously. It's very hard to get statistics as regards women. them, and our tendency is probably to feel that they're probably about the same, but we cannot prove this fact right now. And as regards the other point you make, the female also has a great difficulty in she wants to be a female, but the image that she has of her mother and femininity is a very distorted and hateful one, and as a result she cannot accept the identity, female identity that her mother gives her, and she must find it in a kind of a vicarious form in the love that she makes with her female partner. So you see, both conditions are quite similar, and the mechanisms are quite similar from what we can tell at the present time.
Yes. I had one more question, and it was this. Is it possible not to regard male homosexuality, I'm thinking of in this case, as a sickness in the case of, I'm thinking of a poet, a ménage of two poets, two male poets, well known, and they have had this ménage for about 9 or 10 years. You probably know in New York. And they seem to be very well-adjusted people, and I'm wondering if, is it always necessarily a sickness if they have made this adjustment in their lives, and if they're happy that way, even though it isn't society's way, and it's not going to perpetuate the human race. But I mean, these two poets seem to be very faithful and true to each other, and I'm wondering what's wrong with that if that's what they want to do.
There's nothing wrong with two individuals trying to make an adjustment to themselves, no matter, it seems to me, whatever they are, as long as they do not engage in any activity which is against the public or social good. I think you're absolutely right in that, and I think that they have a right to do what they want to do and what they can do, and I'm sure that, as I pointed out before, you see, homosexuality is really an exquisitely designed symptom which tends to keep in balance many of the frightening and disastrous anxieties that exist in each individual.
Well, doctor,
it neutralizes their fears and does make them feel much better.
Doctor,
and capable of living a pretty good life.
Doctor, do you feel that legalizing homosexual marriages would help in this instance?
Well, I think the idea of marriages is rather ridiculous because you are simply beclouding the issue of what is the nature of this condition. I think in time, as medical science begins to fully describe what homosexuality is all about, we'll see that the legal penalties against homosexuality should probably and will probably be removed. That is, between adult consensual or pairs and in which no children are involved. And this probably should be done, as it was done in England. But the trouble with the English law, the Wolfenden Committee law, was that at the same time that homosexuality between consenting adults was allowed, they did not make any statement or any provisions as regards the fact that this was a form of illness which should not be penalized precisely because it is a form of illness, just the same way as anyone having a neurosis or anyone having a psychosis. You know, it wasn't too long ago that we put psychotics in jail and treated them pretty much the same way as we have treated the homosexual.
Doctor, yes. We have another listener on the line calling in. Miss Lucas, thank you very much for calling that call.
Thank you very much.
All right. Miss Hammersley is listening to Night Call from Columbus, Ohio on WOSU. Good evening, Miss Hammersley.
Good evening. I have two questions that I'd like to ask. You talked about latent homosexuality earlier in the program, if I remember correctly.
Well, I don't know whether I mentioned latent homosexuality, but that certainly is something that should be mentioned. This has been unfortunately, a very confused issue, and people have been using the word latent homosexuality or homosexual as if it's a curse word. By latent homosexuality, we should properly mean those individuals who are truly homosexual but do not actually practice their homosexual desires, do not put them into practice. And these people suffer just as much as the true overt homosexuals. It's simply that they will not allow themselves, for various reasons, not to put into practice what they urgently need and desire, and as a result, they suffer in many ways.
Yes. Now, the question I was the second question I wanted to ask was, how do you think that these latent homosexuals can relate perhaps to females? Is there any chance of a normal sort of non-sexual or platonic relationship to them? Could you comment on that? Or?
Well, I think a person with a true case of latent homosexuality is under such terrific pressures, I think he's going to find it difficult to relate to the female, just as he cannot even find any equilibrium to his sexual life through even expressing his homosexuality. I think he's in kind of a tough spot about this. But certainly, there are many homosexuals who, despite the fact that they cannot have sexual relations with women, attempt to do certain things in the company of women, which make them attractive, and it's been recently suggested that this is a new kind of marriage, which is beneficial because it leaves the woman free to carry on her own affairs and the man free to carry on his, and supported by the institution of marriage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel that such a relationship really can work, especially if the woman, let's say, is heterosexual. She will take great resentment, ultimately, about a man who does not want her as a sexual partner, but wants to be married to and wants to live with her.
Doctor,
I want to have intercourse with her.
We must move on. Miss Hammersley, thank you very much for calling Night Call.
Mm-hmm.
Doctor, we only have a very short time, perhaps a minute and a half left. Briefly, I would like to know, what can a community do to set up these centers for help that you advise for the availability to homosexuals to be able to come in and say, you know, I need help?
Well, I think the first thing is that we promote a national education as to the true meaning of homosexuality. And I think if the public and the homosexual get behind this, that just as behind any other demand for research and solution of any medical problem, I think the public will demand that facilities be put up and be manned and staffed for the help of the homosexual. It's a matter of public education to bring this about.
Fine, Doctor. We have just about come to the end of our time together. We have been talking this evening with Dr. Charles Socarides, a psychiatrist at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York and author of The Overt Homosexual. Doctor, one final question. How do you account for the apparent creative talents of homosexuals? Is this a fact, or is this myth?
Well, I think, Bill, that...
almost a one-word answer
that,
now.
that we are... there are as many people with creative talent who are homosexuals, and there are as many wicked homosexuals as there are wicked heterosexuals.
Doctor, that about winds up our time together. Thank you very much, Doctor.
Yeah.
This is Bill Richards for Night Call.
Night Call. Monday night, same time, same station, The Feminine Mystique with author Betty Friedan. Listen Monday night. Discuss freely and responsibly our own personal opinions on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.